Welcome back to the Dog Gone Wrong podcast, where myself and others share their mistakes and help you lift the guilt burden. I'm your host, Sarah Roper, the multi-dog maven.
Hello, and welcome to another episode with me. Now, this is mainly a solo episode, but there are some little inserts from other people towards the end. It's a bit of a mishmash because I like to bring you quality content, but also quantity. And I've been wanting to do an episode on helping owners who have reactive dogs for a while. And what I've done is I've inserted a recording of one of my reactive Rover presentations. And this will help you go through what you need to help you understand why your dog sometimes barks at other things and sometimes doesn't. And it all comes down to stress levels and things. So I will let you enjoy that in a second. It may blow your brain a little bit. And after that, I'm going to speak to you a bit more about my membership, which helps a lot of people with reactive dogs, as much as people who are training for dog sports or people who just want a bit more guidance. And you'll hear from some of our wonderful members of the crew and how much they've got out of it and what they enjoy about it and what they take from it. So yeah, I'll let you hear the first bit first.
Hello and welcome to module 3, stress levels and what I call the stress bathtub. We're going to learn about trigger stacking, which it'll come with the story of stubbing your toe. And it is all about space, and that involves a fear of spiders or insert any phobia you may have. So let's get stuck in. So the stress bathtub, we all have one. Dogs definitely have one. And basically, the more stressful events that happen, specifically within a short period of time, the more that bathtub starts to fill with stress. Over time, if nothing further stressful happens, no more triggers are presented or anything like that, if you have a nice long gap, then that bathtub will just slowly start to empty. Now, all dogs have a low level of stress. It is stressful living in a human world where, you know, we control everything. And they're constantly trying to understand us and what we expect of them. And naturally, of course, they want to please us because that makes them feel better. They feel more secure knowing that they're not getting told off all the time and things like that. So there'll always be a low level of stress. And that is the same with humans as well. We all have a certain level of stress, but a healthy level is a low level. There is healthy stress. And I do want to point that out. And training, as long as we're doing it in a positive way and we're not expecting too much of them, that is a positive stress as well. So it takes 72 hours. That's the thing. For dogs, it takes 72 hours or 3 whole days for that bathtub to come back down to normal levels. So if they've had so many different events, which could just be barking at other dogs, and they've seen 10 or 11 different dogs on one walk, and they've just got to the point at the end of the walk where they cannot possibly cope, that is the point where this bathtub is overflowing. So when it starts to overflow, that it's basically the cortisol or the stress levels in the dog's brain, they're no longer able to think. You know, they are not responsible for their own actions. This is when we see the events in the news where a dog seemingly out of nowhere has bitten someone's face off or killed someone. It's when that bathtub is totally overflowing. And if a dog gets to this point enough times, it is actually damages their brain chemistry, and they're more likely to go to those steps the next time. But we always want to be keeping that stress bathtub as low level as possible. There's always going to be a small amount of water in it, but we would want to always keep it below that brimming point where it's going to flood everywhere. Okay, so what adds to the bath? It could be visitors. So we also need to think about, you know, excitement levels as well. We can add to that stress level. We can, you know, especially if we've reacted negatively and told them off and or stop barking at that, or, you know, in that kind of tone, we can add to that. And a visit to the vets, of course, that can quite often be a stressful occurrence. Kennels, especially if, you know, you've got a particularly good bond with your dog and they're not used to that environment, or even the groomers, especially if your dog's got a few knots, things like that. Even the best of groomers, there is still going to be a low level of stress on that dog for being groomed. It's not, you know, it's quite an invasive procedure, and for a lot of dogs that they don't particularly enjoy that, but it's needed for their welfare at the same time, so it's taking all of that into account. Too much repetitive play, fetch, so with a ball or similar toy where they're constantly going backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards, that's just building that adrenaline level up constantly. Not a big, personally I'm not a big fan of lots of ball or fetch play or lots of repetitive play. It's not great on their joints. I'm all for playing with our dogs and playing ball, but, you know, a few times and then put it away. It should, and they should be warmed up beforehand and not shoved straight in the car after and things like that. We've got to think about them as an athlete, but this is more about brain chemistry here. So lots of repetitive high energy play will obviously add to this as well. Every time your dog reacts to a dog or person, so barking, lunging, fireworks, seasonal phobias, there's lots of different fireworks going on. So we've got to think about that constant cycle, that if that's happening every night, and then there's obviously normal things happening in the day and the postman coming and delivery drivers coming and the dog getting really excited, then of course that bathtub is going to be more full consistently over those months. And just life in general, the perfect life would be no stress. That's not practical either. So I'm always keeping this in mind. With this in mind, and with the 72 hours as an example, you know, my guys, I'm very fortunate that with my guys for a number of years, they've been involved in one way or another with Crufts, and for the last few years with Discover Dogs in London. So these are quite big events for any dog, and especially for a small dog. You know, they're just walking through crowds of people. All they see is literally a sea of feet and legs and all these scents, and it's like absolute overload to the senses, sounds. And while my guys cope really well with it, bless them, usually once the day after, you know, when we get back, they will probably not go out for a walk for 2 or 3 days after to make sure that that bathtub is empty. Now, some people may think, well, what do you mean you don't walk the dog? Well, I'm making sure that although they haven't done anything wrong, they haven't resorted to lunging, snapping, growling or anything like that externally, I'm still recognizing that that was a stressful environment for any dog, no matter how well they can be used to it or how many years they've been doing it, rather than take them out and say, right, yeah, let's have a good run, and then risk that something triggers them even further. And then they have to resort to these because they're already stressed from the weekend before. I just go, do you know what? We're going to have a few days where we'll just either play in the garden or play some find it games, enrichment stuff, Kongs, chews at home, things like that for a couple of days before then taking them out again. And just little tips like that can help you avoid your dog ever feeling like they need to resort to these higher levels of. So stress triggers before and during a walk, especially if, you know, a really common issue is dogs who are either overexcitable and frustrated and not being able to get to another dog when they're on lead on their daily walks. So they appear aggressive, display aggressive behaviours to get to the other dog. So the lunging, barking, growling, or it comes from a fear perspective of, I really don't trust that other dog. I don't know them. I'm fearful of any trauma that may happen. So I'm going to try and get you away before you come here by lunging, barking and growling. So especially if you have a really set routine with your dogs, with timings of walks. So as it's getting closer to there, they're getting more excited and let's go for this walk. And, you know, and it could be anything up to a few hours before, depending on what time you walk them and how strict the routine is and things like that. So frustration at waiting for a walk. So that fills up that kind of bathtub a little bit. And then car ride. So, you know, 90% of my walks with my guys, they're in the van first, because that's just the way my life is. I'll walk them as part of a booking, or I'll take them somewhere else. I also like variety, but that part of it can also build that frustration of, I'm going on a walk. This is great. We're getting in the car now. We're nearly there. We're pulling into my favorite gateway. You can see how it starts to get more and more full, that bathtub. Okay. And then, you know, we get to the park and they are so excited and they can't go off lead straight away. So many people might just, you know, yank them back on the lead. The dog's like, what? I don't really understand. And then they meet another dog on a walk. So this is, you know, then they're like, ah, I can't control myself. It's not a case of they want to be aggressive. It's not that they are particularly aggressive dogs. It's just more a case of, I've got so worked up and excited and now there's a dog in front of me and blah. And that's how it tends to go. And all of these can happen within an hour. Now, if we had gaps between these, this is probably not the best example for gaps, but if you have gaps between different events, because essentially these are all different events, different triggers, which can fill that bathtub, then we have more chance for that bathtub level to come to drain a bit out the plug, to just slowly drain a bit. So you're less likely to be able to go over that, what we call a threshold. That is that I can't control myself, and we're always trying to work below that threshold. Occasionally we might end up by chance working on the threshold, but that is a very, very fine line. And ideally we always want to work below threshold so the dog doesn't need to resort to these things. So the equivalent in humans for this kind of trigger stacking and the bathtub would be you get out of bed in the morning and you stub your toe and you're like, oh, for God's sake. And you're already gritting your teeth at that because you've just got up and your first thing that happens is negative and you're in pain. But it's minor. And then you'll get ready for work and then you'll go downstairs and you'll make a cup of tea or a coffee and either the dog knocks you or you trip or whatever and you drop your morning brew. And the mug smashes, the hot liquid is all down your clean work clothing. You've got to clear it all up. You've got to go upstairs and get changed. And by the time you finished all that, you're late to work. And then you're stressing getting to work. You're in a foul mood. When you get to work, everyone's like, oh my God, they got out the wrong side of the bed this morning. Now, if someone was to, at that point, put something extra on your desk that you hadn't planned for, when you've already got a busy day planned, you are more likely to snap. You are more likely to kind of go, I can't do this today, or I just can't cope. And that's you snapping. Now, if nothing happens between arriving at work, as in nothing stressful, no further triggers, no minor incidents that are negative or frustrating, by the time you get to the afternoon, you're usually kind of looking back going, oh, it's been a drama queen or king this morning. You know, it really, what was I getting stressed about? It was just two minor things and, you know, bad luck and crap happens sometimes. So we've usually calmed down because those triggers have happened. Those two, three little events have happened in a very short period of time. And as soon as you've got up, if you'd have stubbed your toe first thing in the morning and then kind of nothing really has happened negative, and then you smashed your cup of tea of an evening, you wouldn't feel the same. You wouldn't go in this negative mindset and, you know, more likely to snap at people and more likely to be negative. So again, it's about having that time distance between things. Okay, so now we need to look at space as well. So if you have a severe phobia of spiders, I don't want to trigger you. It's more a case of an example. And we're usually better at imagining things than seeing. So if you haven't got a phobia of spiders, try and think of something that you do have a phobia of. So for me, that would be, it's not a serious phobia, I have to say, but I'm really not keen on scorpions. It's that tail. It just gets me. I'm like, nope. For other people, it might be snakes, you know, like cockroaches, earwigs. It doesn't really matter what it is. I just want to keep that in mind, but I'm going to call it a spider. So if that spider was in front of you right now, say within a meter of you, and you have a phobia, you would not be able to hold a conversation. You will not be able to listen to someone, and your only focus, your whole body would be trying to get you away from it. Occasionally, there are some people who is like, I must kill it now. But ideally, usually they don't want to put themselves in that danger or perceived danger, and they'll get someone else to remove it or kill it or whatever if someone is there that is braver than them. So in that mindset, with that distance, which for some people, it may be a further distance or it might have to be quite close for it to scare them. So again, it depends. And there's going to be a lot of that. And with dogs, it depends. But if you're at that distance where you are just focused on, I need to get away, there is no way that I could say to you, okay, we're going to try this today and I'm going to try and teach you this. You wouldn't even hear it. You would not even hear it. There is no way that you could engage and have a conversation, never mind learn. And when we see dogs that are that stressed and already barking and lunging and growling, especially at other dogs, although you could apply it to most things that they're performing these behaviors with, if it's fear-based, what we get is, you know, we get more annoyed at them as humans, like, come on, you know, it's fine. It's all right. It's only the neighbor's dog or whatever it may be. They can't hear you. No matter how much you shout at them, sometimes they can kind of engage and we make them worse by shouting because they're picking up on our energy. Because by shouting, they're going, oh, well, there was something to be worried about because mums or dads are worried too. But yeah, that close distance, there is no point in trying to train within that distance. They can't engage. They can't listen. It's just, yeah, no point. This is your bathtub overflowing. So no, just get more space. Get them out of there as much as quickly as possible. So then we have kind of what we call a medium distance. And this is slightly under the threshold, which is the ideal distance to be able to work and make progress with, to be able to decrease the distance eventually, is a distance where if it was the spider, it might be across the other side of the room where you can kind of have a glance and then you could have a conversation. You're fairly consistently checking back as the spider moved. Oh, it's still there. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Can engage. Yeah. Yeah, it's still there. Okay, yeah, I can carry on with this conversation. So that of the checking in, but being able to engage is. And then there's a further distance where you're not even aware that the spider's there and the dog's not even aware that another dog or whatever the trigger is there. So there's no point in training at that far distance because the dog isn't aware what we're working around and they're just like, oh yeah, this is great. I'm getting treats or I'm getting rewarded, but I don't really know what for. And it's not going to help improve things. So there is a difference as well between the kind of the spider's there, can have a conversation, just checking back and I'm listening. But that energy of the, you're not really listening. You're taking in snippets of conversation, but your main focus is on the spider. And that is, you are too close. You are on the threshold. So you want to bring it down so you've got that calmer energy. Triggers and distances. So these will change depending on how full that bathtub is to start with. So learn what your dog's triggers are. It may be that they are mainly triggered by black dogs. That's a really common one. Be mindful of their bathtub. You know, if they've had a couple of stressful days or you're at the end of the walk and they've already seen three or four dogs that they didn't want to see, then that bathtub's getting pretty full. They may have been good at the start of the walk, but not at the end. Why? Well, that's your bathtub. If they are too close, they cannot process the information. And then that's when they react or go over threshold. So distances will change day to day and walk to walk. Don't work at a specific distance at all times. So this is if you're working on improving these things around other dogs and you're trying to build their confidence, just because you've managed to get within 10 meters of a dog and the dog's been okay, doesn't mean you can go 10 meters straight away to the next dog or the next day. It will change. It will depend on the other dog. It will depend on the other dog's breed type, breed colour, their behaviour. Obviously, if a dog's already barking at your dog, your dog is more likely to jump to conclusions and start barking back. So you can't just go, I can work my dog within 10 metres and then apply that to everything. Dogs don't work like that. Okay, how do we know how they're feeling? So this is what a lot of the course is about. You learn to read your dog. So by learning, you know, these ear kind of twitches and micro changes in their body language, we can start to go, okay, yep, they're starting to get stressed now. How can we make them feel better? Quite often it's about more space. Use some of the calming signals to help them. So we can use these to help our dogs as well. A big sigh helps as well, like that helps calm them down. You'll hear them do it when they're relaxing and, you know, and just lying on their side, no stressful things going on, and they take a big sigh. So it is a calming signal that they recognize. The yawn helps calm them down as well. And, you know, you might feel silly licking your own lips to your dog, but it does help them. If they are suddenly taking treats or toys, depending on what you're using to reward them, faster, so snatching, and not wanting to eat, previously were taking them in a better, calmer way, you're too close. That's the, yeah, I'm listening, but the focus is on the spider. That's the, I'll take the treat, but I can only focus on that. And that you've also got that staring behavior. Again, ladder of aggression. Okay, also think about them panting because of stress, but then they stop panting. You'll hear it. The panting, and then suddenly they actually stop breathing for a second. They pause, and usually they will then have to close their mouth before they then start to bark. So that is your window to kind of get in there and go, what's this? Or let's go this way in a positive way. It's a very short window, but it's a window all the same. So you get in there, you can do something positive before they learn, before they actually bark at the thing. So you're actually saying, I hear you. You don't need to bark. I hear what you're saying. I'm listening. Let's get out of here and get more space. Okay. Additional considerations to think about, and then we're going to wrap up because this is a lot for you to process. I understand that, especially if you've not gone through this kind of thing before. This is specifically for groomers and vets, and it also happens with dog walkers and stuff like that, but mainly with groomers, I'd say. I have done grooming, so I have more experience in that than obviously the veterinary world, but I'm sure it will happen in the vets as well. A dog, now I can't quite, you know, I can't say here's the smell, this is what it smells like, but dogs will produce a smell when they are very stressed. You will smell it as people. That's how pungent it can be. I had it with older, quite elderly dogs when grooming them, if they've been very matted because of, you know, it's more of a welfare case, or a younger dog, say 18 months, 2 years old that has never actually been to a grooming salon before. This whole situation is very stressful to them. They've not been desensitized. They've not been introduced to all these things, and they're mattered. So yes, it is a stressful environment for them. We're trying to do the best for them by making them feel better, but it is a stressful situation. And what you'll find is they have this very pungent smell, and it'll come on very, very sudden. Even though you've bathed them and things like that, it's them kind of trying to communicate, this is quite really stressful right now. Dogs that are really stressed as well can just empty their anal glands, which stinks too. It's a very fishy, awful smell. If we're getting to these points, then it's bad. I'm not saying that that dog is going to bite you, but any dog will, pushed far enough. But these are very unhappy dogs, let's put it that way. We also have to consider that any amount of pain, underlying health issues, you know, whether undiagnosed or diagnosed, any amount of pain, as people, if we're in pain, we're less likely to be tolerant of things. So that stress bathtub is going to get fuller quicker. And it's very much the same with dogs. So I'm always encouraging clients, please go and see the vet. Please go and have a pain check. Please go and get them checked over, because I don't want to be making things any worse when I'm advising you to do things if the dog is already in pain. And it obviously affects their behavior. You're just going to be a lot more ratty when you're in pain. A lot of adrenaline or cortisol can definitely cause loose stools. It's the same in people. High levels of stress or chronic or consistent stress can slow the healing. Again, the same in people, or the ability to deal with other physical issues. Allergies, I've seen it a lot. I am not a vet. I have never trained as a vet. I'm just on that front. I am just commenting on what I have seen in the dogs that I've worked with, that dogs that are chronically stressed are more likely to have flared allergies. And when the stress is lowered, their ability to cope with those allergies or their symptoms of those allergies start to improve. Okay, right. Class complete. Please let me know what you think, because for some, this will be fine and hopefully a nice reminder. But for others, this may have been a bit of a brain blower. So yeah, I'd love to know what you think, and hopefully it helps.
So hopefully that's not blown your brain too much. I'm sure for some of you, you'll listen to it and go, yeah, I know that. But there's maybe some examples in there that you could, if you're working with dogs and owners, that you can use and pass on to help them understand more, or just a bit of a reminder. And I know for some of you, it will be new news. And that 72-hour rule is quite key. And it tends to be, the reason why I wanted to share that particular bit, that's part of a wider course that you can do with me. But it seems to be the biggest kind of eye-opener for a lot of people who have barky dogs, so I thought that may help. So yeah, let's talk about my membership, which I'm sure if you've been a listener for a while, you'll have heard me put little adverts in towards the end and mention it, and you can still get in with a month's free trial. So what have you got to lose? We've had a few people join recently, loving their free trials and continuing on with it, which is fab. That's the whole point. But you know, at the same time, if you join and go, do you know what, this ain't for me, this ain't gonna work, that's absolutely fine too. So yeah, you will hear from some of our wonderful members, and towards the end you will find out how you can join us if you want to. As always, there's never any pressure.
Well, like Chrissy, I like the community aspect of it all, really, and the fact that we can chat. And we, up until recently, we'd never met each other. And what was lovely was the fact that we knew each other, despite the fact that we'd never seen each other face to face. I love the turbo little 5-minute things. That really works for me, because it means it makes me focused on things I've got to work on, things I might like to work on, but it also gives me a structure to work to. So I like that, and I love these chats, and I love the fact that we can talk to each other and send each other messages and say, have you tried this, can we do that, what do you think about this. That is what I like about it. Once again, community, and the fact that we're all on the same page. Different dogs, different problems, but we're all on the same page about how we want to cope. So yeah, love it.
Thank you, appreciate that. What did you think the crew was before you joined, Jackie?
I had got no idea. No, I mean, you can actually, somebody can tell you what something's all about, but everyone experiences it in a different way. I didn't know until we had the first session, and I thought, oh, I think I'm going to like this. Well, I stand out in the garden in all sorts of weather, so I must like.
Yeah, very committed. Love it.
I didn't have any preconceived ideas of what it might be. Had no idea how the turbo calls would work, but they do.
Yeah.
They do, and they're fun, and it's nice to sort of exchange knowledge and ideas as well. You know, you turn up at 7 o'clock in the morning to do a training session and you're a bit bleary-eyed and someone else is doing something. You think, actually, yeah, that's a really good idea. I might have a go at that. But yeah, I think it does just outside of the turbos as well. It does make you a bit more driven to do things. You can sit around and procrastinate all you like, can't you, and go, oh, I should be doing this. Just do it. It takes 5 minutes. And then after that, you're like, yeah, that was worthwhile. And when you can start to see the difference in the dogs, you know, that's the best part, isn't it? And the joy on their face, because they just love learning and they love the interaction. So, you know, it just makes it all worthwhile. But yeah, it is. It's great that we can just have our chats as well. But yeah, you know, it is. It's nice. We built a nice little community. And like Jackie said, it was really lovely to meet everybody. I mean, Chrissy, I'd never met you before in person. And I ran into you, didn't I? Give me a hug. I don't know where everybody is. It's Edition Dog Life. She's like, brave. It's okay. Never met you before. Hello. But it's weird, isn't it? Yeah, it's like you do get to know people, even though they're turbos, because you can put a face to the name and the voice. And, you know, you become very familiar with each other and the dogs. Yeah, meeting in person is just a bit of a bonus, isn't it? Yeah. I love it.
Bob. Thank you all. Spirit Bamla. Shirley is hopefully enjoying her free trial currently. She's been with us for about 3 weeks now. And so, yeah, over to you, Shirley. What did you think it was before? And, you know, how are you enjoying it?
I must admit, I didn't have a clue of it before. Never heard of it. It was only because Chrissy sort of obviously had joined and put me in contact with you and sort of said, I think it's something that you'll probably, you know, like. So I didn't really have any sort of preconceptions. I thought, okay, I'm you know, up for anything. I'll sort of give it a go. And yeah, I'm really enjoying it. Like I say, the accountability of it. Actually, I mean, I'm gutted. Actually, I didn't get myself with it this morning and do the turbo. But yeah, sort of makes me do it. Whereas before, I think it would be like, oh yeah, I'll do something with the dogs in a minute. I'll do something with the dogs in a minute. But now I think no. At that time, I'm going to do something with one of them. Or, you know, I'll try it. It does make you accountable for doing it. And then when you do the turbo training, you give us a little bit of feedback, you sort of think, oh yeah, I could do it. You can sort of carry that forward. So I like that. Yeah. And yeah, just being part of like little community, like you say, there's no judgment, which I like, and really enjoying your podcast. So I'm just catching up with some of those that we've done. So yeah, it was good.
Fab. Thank you. Really, thank you. And I'm glad you're enjoying it. So that means a lot to me.
Definitely community, like-minded people. I think the judgment, there isn't a judgment. We say what we like, but it doesn't matter. It can be, we can sound silly to us, but we never get that response back when we say something. Yeah, and accountability, definitely. Having like the short sort of training sessions when they are, and sort of it makes you want to do it. It does make you want to do it. So yeah, I would say that. I don't know what I thought it was before we joined, because I was bugging you for about a year before.
You were. Yes. The first ever member that was a member for like a year before it actually started, basically.
Is that a pre-member?
Yeah.
So if you want to grab that free 1 month trial, all you need to do is either drop me a message, the link is in the show notes for you to get it direct, or drop me an email to sarah@multidogmaven.co.uk. That's it. And I will catch you next week, and we have an amazing guest planned. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Dog Gone Wrong podcast. If you could do me a quick favour, like or follow the pod, rate and leave a review, and maybe share with a dog-owning friend. Let's get the word out there and ensure there is less guilt around the mistakes. Thank you again, and we'll be back next week.